This is a podcast from meow.net.
Meow!
As a social practice artist, I sometimes visit schools and lead creative activities with children. Teachers tell the class they must be good listeners. But what is a good listener? Am I a good listener? Listening can be hard to describe or define. It depends on your relationships, your context, your intentions for listening. I'd like my community-based art practice to be open and collaborative, and so surely listening is very important. My name is Hannah Kemp Welsh, and this series is part of my research into listening within social art practice. In these episodes, I speak to socially engaged, community and participatory artists to understand how they listen within their practice, what gets in the way of listening, and what the consequences of listening might be. Episode 6, Marley Starsky-Butler, Resourcing Listening. Marley was introduced to me by Newtown Culture, a curatorial project connecting contemporary art practices with social work and youth justice. We recorded a podcast together a few years ago, exploring identity and culture in social work, questioning what is culture. Marley is a multidisciplinary artist and social worker. They work across visual, audio, and written mediums and explore the intersections between art, social work, and their familial lived experience of social work. Just to get us started, would you be able to introduce your practice, your areas of work?
I would say, overall, my practice in one, I'm a multidisciplinary artist. And I'm a social worker as well. I would say those two are my practices. They have come together in more recent times through bits and pieces of work and through exhibiting, which has kind of encompassed my experience as a social worker and also my lived experience of social work as a child. I would just say I make stuff and I do bits and pieces of things and I just reach for whatever makes sense at the time through necessity and curiosity. And then within social work, through local authority, I've worked across the spectrum. So beginning with child protection, moving into different forms of fostering, currently adoption, and I'm about to move again to sidestep from local government to the NHS. And I'll be working with child and adolescent mental health services and how they transition to adult mental health services. So I'll be working there soon. And it all kind of mixes all together.
Thanks. Could we dive into an example? What are you working on at the moment?
I've been doing a project. Have you heard of hospital rooms?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, I've been doing a project with them over the last year in Sandwell. We didn't get to making artworks for the rooms until we did a whole series of workshops. So all of the artists who work with us, they do workshops with the people who use the service. My stream was storytelling specifically, so we were doing storytelling workshops with children in the area and children that use the service. And it was the stuff that came out of those workshops that then would influence the artwork, just contextualized in a slightly different way. The thing that I did at the end couldn't have existed without the workshops and without that. It wouldn't. And that was definitely one where it was just I had to really trust the process of what was going on. Because mine was in the crisis intervention room. These rooms have they aren't art spaces. These rooms are functioning rooms. Anything that I would do in a crisis intervention room has to be with the thought process of this is the crisis intervention room. This is children coming into this room, highly unregulated and things like this and da 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 da. So in the end, my cats in both worlds sat kind of well there in the sense of the work kind of came out of stuff that I was doing with the young people and then also thinking of the professionals working in that room as well and trying to have the work be able to have some double functions in terms of being able to use the shapes and stuff as part of intervention, as part of marking how children feel when they come into the room and stuff choices. There's different there's like different squares with like different size gaps. And it's kind of like to represent like how boxed in or unboxed in do you feel right now and blah, 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 blah. So it's kind of, it has that, it has like different layers of elements conceptually of what it's doing in the room and its movement and its purpose in the room.
So the workshops allowed you to observe the sorts of people who might use the room, their needs in the space, almost like the workshops were a sort of listening exercise?
Yeah, yeah, completely, completely. There's no bail. Yeah, that's, yeah. Some elements of the work is you can make a direct connection to some of the work that George did, and some of it, and a lot of it is more abstract. But like everybody, without any of it, it wouldn't have existed at the end. Like it just had, that's whatever the outcome is, the process that led to it, if you changed any of the process or anything, then the outcome would have been different. So it's all of that.
And you've also just had a show at the Midlands Arts Centre where your professional knowledge of social work also influenced the work?
So yeah, the show at MAC, it was selected excerpts of various projects together to form one project. Project was called 36, which was playing on the idea of when you're classed as being like an adult for longer than you've been a child, it's 18 plus 18. That was like the concept of it, kind of like went through that brought the work together, and kind of any experiences as a child or whatever that kind of impact you as an adult should now just go away. Like they shouldn't be, it shouldn't affect you anymore. So it's kind of a bit of a, it's tongue in cheek because that's obviously not, is false. Physically in the show was a mixture of things. So it was quite photography heavy. There was one audio piece and some more kind of like conceptual things, which was like framed pages of my children's services records from when I was a child. So in one of the projects, it was called Access Subject, and it was a project I'm doing with my birth mother, exploring my childhood, my records when I was living with her for 3 years at the beginning, then I moved away from her. And then I got my children's services records from when I was a kid, written by social workers. And then me and her had lots of conversations about those records and about her life and about everything about, yeah, her life as a child and everything that she'd been through and just our relationship. And this project was made to... the process of the project was done in order to us to kind of have our first conversations together, really, as like adults. It's an unedited verbatim text, so it's got all of how I'm speaking now is exactly how it's written, with all the ums and the ahs and the this and the that, and that is all just like there.
I've heard that sometimes people have quite a difficult relationship with those records, that some young people request their records when they're 18 and then stage a sort of ritual burning of the records, a bonfire of those records somewhere.
Yeah, so that those records, it was interesting, my records, because my records were, a lot of it was redacted, and that's how a lot of people receive their records generally. And I had full pages that were redacted of mine. I had a lot of records where there was a lot of information there, and it might just like take away like a paragraph or a sentence, and this is stuff that's classed as like third party information or information that's not yours. So information might be like about my birth mother or about siblings and things like this. Ironically, the job that I'm doing now is access to records for adopted people. That's what I'm doing now, which is purely a coincidence from after I did this work. But in the subject access team, which is more about the care records, yeah, they'll make a bunch of reductions, but it's a human thing that happens. So it's quite interesting. So just through my knowledge of social work anyway, I was like, there's certain things that I think are missing that might not be under those reductions, and could you do another type of search? They did another search, they came back because they pulled out some files from my siblings' records that were to do with me, so they managed to get more. But some of those records were duplicates of the ones I already had, but they were redacted in a different way, which then shows that the human aspect of it, because it was just like a different person did it on a different day and chose different redactions of, like, it's an interesting thing. And also, I just think the process of it is interesting. I think it's a semi kind of violent thing to do, to like send somebody a page that just has that's just gray with a gray square. Like one of the pages just says my birth mother's name and like date of birth. And it will say like, up top of that, it will say like background, and then it's all redacted. And then that tells you something without telling you something. You know what I mean? Like there's a lot there, but you can't know. So it's almost like the project of me talking to my birth mother was her telling me what could be underneath those redactions from her perspective. I was to do a a personal archive, I think it's just important to document people like around you, especially when they're like, if they're older or even not even older, just like someone, people with stories, like a reason to sit down and have those conversations. Social work helped with that in terms of like the kinds of assessments I was doing back then. It was very much, I had to assess somebody's like whole life. So I'm quite used to like sitting down with someone and be like, right, let's start from the very beginning. Like, when were you born? What were your parents like? What are your first, like starting there? And I guess when you talk about in terms of like listening and stuff like this, it's just being able to step back and like look around and then trying to like edit together your thoughts, I guess, like in terms of an analysis. It's hard to codify exactly what it is, but it's there like 1,000% because it can't not be.
Yeah, and I'd imagine that listening is a huge part of social work. Do you get taught to listen? Is there any training around listening in social work?
I don't know. Because then social work education is a thing, and then I guess you do your education kind of once, then you do training throughout the years, but it's a slightly different thing. Communication skills is a thing. The act of like reflecting what somebody has said back to them to ensure that you've got an understanding of it. I think that is a form of listening, because you are reflecting back to them to say that you, not just memory, but just like, just to ensure that I've got the right understanding of what you're saying. And then they have a chance to kind of like edit what you've said a bit, because it's like, well, actually I didn't mean it quite like that, but this is how I meant it, and giving that opportunity. So things like that that's taught in like good communication skills is a thing. But I think as you go on, like human wise, the more you kind of like know about stuff, the more you sometimes people can stop listening or listen less because they feel like they already know the answers to stuff. When there's like a systematic failure of society politically, then phrases like hard to hear children come about. A lot of stuff can be done around adults, and all of the assessments can be very adult focused about what they are doing to care for children with this, but we're losing the literal voice of the child and what they need. So we need to, that's why writing styles have changed and things like this. And it's like, there's no resources and everyone's firefighting. So it's almost like there's no space to listen. It's like, we're just trying to put out the fire.
So when you say writing styles have changed, I think you mean that social work records have shifted in tone, where now they are addressed to the young person that they concern rather than written in a sort of third person voice, that they're made to feel more personal on the understanding that some young people will read these records and that could be a very difficult process for them. And so the social workers try and speak to them directly in that way. But what you say about resourcing listening is so important across disciplines.
Yeah, 1,000,000%. It means you're just naturally unable to be exactly as present as you could be. So you're not, there's like a surface level listening that you're doing. And you might even interrupt the situation because it's kind of like, I can't take too much in because I'm going to forget the things I need to record almost. Or you might like literally have to kind of record whilst you're doing it. So you can't, it would be to a detriment of listening. I like the newish, not even new, but under-resourced populations, I quite like. Because it puts the emphasis not on the population. Of like they're a problem and therefore we can't do the thing. It's like, no, they're under-resourced.
Ways of Listening is a series for Meanwhile in an Abandoned Warehouse, a podcast about cultural democracy in community art. Show notes with links to the projects discussed are available at meow.net. This episode was recorded and produced by Hannah Kemp-Welsh.